Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Marie and Ali Moreno here with you in the studio, looking ahead to a massive day of action on Saturday. It's the FA Cup final between Liverpool and Chelsea, the two of them meeting again in a cup final for the second time this season. That went all the way to penalties, but did finish 0-0 after extra time. In fact, you've not been able to separate them all season. In both of their Premier League encounters at Stamford Bridge and Anfield, it has finished in a draw. We now welcome in Julien Laron, Jan Agafyortov and Craig Burley. Craig, I want to start with you. You've played in an FA Cup final for Chelsea. What are you thinking about? How are you feeling the night before a game?
Well, as a player, you just can't wait to get out there and play at Wembley, which is the showcase game in English football, for sure. And Chelsea have had a great success in this competition since sort of, you know, mid-90s to the 2000s when the money was pouring in. So it's been a very good competition for several Chelsea coaches. And they're a strong side. I mean, they haven't had a strong season domestically since the turn of the year. It's the title challenge fell away. But if, you know, if the bumps and bruises are not too bad, Chelsea are a strong side. And you mentioned it, Kay. The head-to-head between these sides recently is very, very close. Yes, Liverpool are the favourites, and rightly so. But I think the absence of Fabinho just moves the needle a little bit closer to 50-50 because he's such a big player for them.
Jules, how important is this to both teams?
Well, it's very important, but for different reasons. I think for Thomas Tuchel, it's about saving the season. Really, of course, they will tell you they already have two trophies, the European Super Cup and the Club World Cup, which is great. But still, it's been a bit underwhelming in the Champions League. It's been underwhelming in the league as well, where we expected them to be closer to City and Liverpool, certainly to compete for the title a bit more. And then obviously that defeat in the League Cup final that we've just seen. So in a way, saving the season. For Liverpool, you're in a different mindset. The difference is you're going for trophies, more trophies. You've got one in the bag, you've got this final, you've got another final, obviously, in the Champions League at the end of the month. And there's still the Premier League where, okay, you will need City to slip up and make a mistake, but you still can win it now, and you can still win all four trophies. So, very important for both, but for different reasons.
Jan, who do you think it's more important for?
Well, the funny thing is, the drama around it as well with the two managers. I mean, Thomas Tuchel replacing Klopp in Mainz, replacing him in Dortmund, and then came after him to England after he had to jump into Paris for a while as well. But don't you ever call Thomas Tuchel for little brother. He doesn't like that comparison thing about him and Klopp. So I think that will be important for Tuchel. But I mean, I speak to a lot of football fans on Twitter and social media, people I meet, and they now they're all not Liverpool fans. They will just say, yeah, well, Liverpool will only end up winning a League Cup after talking about this quadruple all the time. But I'm looking forward to a fantastic football game. I was there at the League Cup final. It was drama. It was an amazing, entertaining game that was partly was blue and then was back to red dominance on the pitch. It was a fantastic final, and I expect the same thing tomorrow. As we saw on the results, that there's not a lot between them when they play each other. So I think we were up for a classic here.
What do you think, Ali? When it comes to both teams, who needs it more?
I would assume that it's going to be Chelsea simply because of the reasons that Jules just gave. It could be something portrayed as a season-saving result or season-saving win, something that you can hang your hat on and say, you know what, things didn't go our way in Champions League. Things didn't go our way during the domestic season, what Craig just alluded to. But we have this. We're going to lift this trophy, and then this sets us up for the future. And now we're optimistic because with the new ownership coming in, we have things sorted out and organized, and we're going in the right path, in the right direction. Obviously, it's easier to build once you have a plan in place in terms of the ownership, but it's also easier to build when you're feeling a whole lot better about yourself. How do you feel a whole lot better about yourself? Winning FA Cup. I think this is more important for Chelsea than it would be for Liverpool.
Well, let's get further into the team news then. And you do wonder who will be starting up front for Chelsea, because that man, Romelu Lukaku, has given his boss a bit of a difficult decision. Out of favour for most of the season, then he started the last two games against Wolves and Leeds, scoring three goals across those two games. In that game against Leeds, it was Lukaku, Pulisic and Mount who were the three up front. As for Jurgen Klopp, he was asked how he would prepare his side for this, but he is definitely not second-guessing his counterpart.
We have no idea how Thomas will line up, for example. There are so many different options in offensive area. Werner, Cech and Havertz didn't start the last game. Could all three start, for example? Gives a completely different dynamic to Lukaku, Mount and Pulisic, these kind of things. Can play with two strikers, can play with one and two tens.
Jules, we asked you for your possible starting 11 for Chelsea. Talk us through it.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, I think the defence and the midfield, especially if Conte is fit and we put Conte in the team, believing that he should be okay to start alongside Kovacic. Otherwise, Jorginho will come in for one of them. But then, obviously, the big question mark is up front. And I think Jurgen Klopp was spot on. No one really knows what combination Tuchel is going to pick. I think it's really hard to drop Lukaku then after the two games that he just had. And not just the three goals in the last two games, and albeit against teams that are not as strong as Liverpool in Leeds away and Wolves, but more that the way the team played for him or with him, the way he dropped, the way he participated, far more than maybe he did in previous starts in the Premier League. So that was very encouraging, I thought. And I think, okay, with Lukaku in that kind of form, with the physicality, play him. Mount has to play because he's Chelsea's best player this season. He's been involved in 21 goals in total in the Premier League this season. So Mount obviously will be there. And then what do you do with the third man? Is it Havertz, who has been really good for you but hasn't really played much the last two games? Do you keep faith in Timo Werner, who in cup competitions has done quite well for Chelsea? Do you go with Pulisic? I personally think that we could see a Havertz, Lukaku, Mount trio up front. But again, right now, I think it's everybody's guess.
Do you agree, Craig? Who do you think the three up front should be?
I think the three goals might have swung it. And go back to the teams, you know, people get caught up with who's going to play. Let's be honest, Liverpool ain't changing their team for Chelsea. So guess what? You get a team sheet an hour before the game, and then you figure out who's going to play. But Liverpool ain't changing, no matter who plays up front. Yeah, it'll be a different dynamic, but they're not going to, you know, Klopp's not second-guessing, oh, who do I play, Matip, Kanati, because who's going to play there? But I think Thomas Tuchel, going back to Chelsea, could use this with Lukaku, a little bit of mind management, and say, look, it's been a tough season, partly down to yourself with the interview. It's derailed domestically. You've played the last couple of games. You've got three goals. You could end the season well here. Yeah, the future, we don't know what's going to happen, whether he stays, whether he goes. But he could get some kudos back with the Chelsea fans, and I think that's how I would play it if I was Thomas Tuchel. Right, look, you know the fans have been on your back, but you're in a little good mini run of form here. You could, as I say, make the Chelsea fans kind of like you again. So I would use that to try and get in Lukaku's head to finish the season strongly. And because of those three goals, I think there's every chance he could start. But on the other hand, I wouldn't be surprised either if it was Havertz through in the middle and Werner and Mount floating in behind. I just don't know.
Jan, should Lukaku start?
Yeah, should he start? I'm not sure that Thomas Tuchel knows as we're speaking, because I had a privilege and to pick his brain a bit before the Champions League final, and it was quite interesting. He told us before the game, the night before the game, and he said that was Champions League final coming up, and he said, I only got eight players that I know gonna play, and I'm thinking of now which of the players can come on from the bench and change the game. Some kind of modern coach kind of thinking there, and at the end he made that right. I think that the form from Lukaku has, of course, given him better cards. On the other side, playing Lukaku is more predictable how to defend against, because when you play with a Havertz, a Mount or a Werner, you're not 100% sure what kind of dynamic will be up front. But it's a big decision for him to make. And I think the boys have been absolutely right. Going to Lukaku and say, listen, let's forget what was and what will be tomorrow. We don't know. This is your chance to save the season for Chelsea Football Club. And Tuchel could use that as a leadership kind of motivation for Lukaku.
Yeah, he did say, Tuchel, in his news conference, that the final call will be made in the morning. Mm.
And while we focus on Lukaku, and rightfully so, I think there are other aspects of this game that are going to be critical for the potential success of Chelsea, and that is those guys who play underneath, whether that's Mount, Havertz, Kovacic, Kante, that they force Thiago Alcantara to defend. So Fabinho is not there. You got to force Thiago Alcantara to cover the ground defensively. And then whenever he has the ball, those guys working around Thiago Alcantara, putting pressure on him so that he's not carrying the pace of the game. You force Thiago Alcantara to defend, it takes away from everything else that he does on the field. He doesn't want to do it. It's not a natural thing for him. So force him into a position in which he has to be aware of what's behind my right shoulder, what's behind my left shoulder, why is this guy floating here, who's going to cover that space. Force him to think about the defensive part of the game, and that's going to take away from the things he can do in transition going forward.
Well, Romelu Lukaku has actually been in the news for much more than the starting 11 in the FA Cup final. It's due to his future and talk via his agent, Federico Pastorello, who said, "We cannot think about negotiations. Chelsea are in takeover discussions. We do not know the new owners, let alone if we can open talks with Inter or Milan. We have to wait. I don't discuss the tactical choices, but it's obvious that there was a problem."
Ah.
Right? So that's Lukaku. This is Lukaku responding to what we've seen here. "Never ever will I let someone speak for me. I kept my mouth shut and focused on helping the team and end the season in the best way as possible. So if someone out there is trying to say something about me in the club, not in my name."
What?
All right,
well
Jules.
Done.
Jules,
well done.
What is going on here?
It's a good question. They used to get on together, Pastorello and Lukaku, maybe not so much anymore. I think Pastorello is not he's an agent that has helped the move, for example, for Lukaku to Chelsea from Inter. They've worked together for a long time, but I believe they're not as, I think Pastorello is an intermediary now in the career of Romelu Lukaku, not the official sole agent, if you want, for example. And that, for me, that's how I interpret as well the reaction from Lukaku. Or like, okay, you've helped me before and there's no doubt, I think they are still friends, but right now this is a different matter. It's a matter that me on my own can also decide what to do, and you can't talk and say to people what I'm thinking right now. And I think that was right from Lukaku. The problem is, this is the wrong timing again. This is not what you want on the eve of an FA Cup final, when you have a chance to play, when you've been on good form. And again, all of this is coming like a parasite around you and around Chelsea and your future. And people talk about you more about that than about the final the following day. So this is the story of Lukaku's season, really. Timing has been a big problem for most of it.
Yeah, and obviously you explained the situation behind it there, Jules, but it's been reported very much so as his agent, and that's what we're seeing across all the papers. So that's not going to help Lukaku in this situation. And as Jules said, Jan, it isn't good timing at all.
No timing at all. I mean, if there's going to be a trophy before the FA Cup trophy, it should go to the most stupid agent I've ever seen this season. Doing that, and Lukaku was told off after he did that Inter interview. Lukaku has kept his mouth shut. I think he responded brilliantly here. And there are some agents out there, or there are some football people out there who doesn't know anything about timing. I can't see any way that will help this agent except getting some quotes in and around the football world. Because this is so stupid. This is a reason to be fired. And if he is employed by Lukaku, he should be gone. And like I said, Lukaku done well, responded straight away. Shows that maybe he has matured a bit in terms of not talking about other clubs. And the last months has been turbulent at Chelsea, and they don't need one stupid agent then giving those kind of comments. And I'm saying stupid in terms of timing. I don't know him personally. He's probably the brightest man alive.
What do you make of it all, Craig?
I wouldn't bother. It's a lot of nonsense. I wouldn't bother with it. I mean, let's be honest. Who is this guy? Do you know, apart from a handful of people, you know, most people wouldn't know him if he popped up as a crouton in the soup. So who cares? I mean, who cares? It's just there's so many people talking about players these days. So listen, Lukaku's been in a bigger mess this season already with his interviews. So I'm sure he's not particularly worried. He's responded to it. Finish the season well. Big opportunity tomorrow. Big showcase opportunity, and we'll see what happens in the summer. But I think, you know, it looks likely to me that fee dependent, that I think Lukaku could be gone from Chelsea next summer. As I say, depending on the finances of other clubs.
Kay, I just want to say that I just got a feeling I'm in Germany now, as I always am. I think that maybe Robert
Lewandowski... Yeah, in front of a hotel room door again.
I have the best lighting. I have the best studio at room 678 in Maritime Hotel, exactly. but what I wanted to say, what Craig is saying, what are happening this summer, we don't know. We know that here in Germany, there is a guy called Robert Lewandowski who wants to move, who wants to leave the club. And he could be a dark horse, outsider for the position as a number nine at Chelsea Football Club as well. There's a lot of people talking about Barcelona, but let's watch this summer. It's going to be interesting also in that department.
Yeah, that's something we'll definitely touch on. But let's talk about the goalkeepers, because we know what happened in the Carabao Cup final. We know it went to penalties. Neither of them, it has to be said, because everybody mentions the fact that obviously Kepa came on as a substitute for this very moment in the hope that he'd save some of those penalties. Uh-huh. Didn't save any of them. Neither did Kelleher, might I add. But then it does come down to the goalkeepers to take the penalties. And we all know what happened. Kelleher scored his.
Uh-oh.
Kepa had to follow up and make sure he made his.
Mother!
Skied it.
No.
I mean, does this impact what we're going to see over the weekend, LA?
I think coaches are very stubborn. And Thomas Tuchel comes across, in my opinion, as a stubborn guy as well. And he told us back then that he's got his numbers, he's got his stats, he's got, they studied it, they knew what the decision was coming into the game, and he wasn't about to change it because he had all that information available to him. I said back then, and I'll say now, that this game, a lot of it, while you have stats and they have a place in the game, and indeed you have to use them to your advantage whenever you can, it's also about feel. It's also about the moment and making decisions on the run. And some of the best coaches in the world can adjust on the run and make the choices that they need to make in order to have their teams have the best opportunity to win matches. In that game, I thought Mendy was the best option to have on the penalty kicks. He had had a great game. He felt confident. He had just come from the AFCON final where he had been successful in penalties, and yet we chose back then to ignore all of that. So I'll say it now again, ahead of time. If it comes down to penalty, I'm leaving Mendy on the field.
What do you think the plan will be, Jules? I bet they've been practicing the penalties, haven't they?
Yeah, I think certainly they will have a plan. I would be very surprised if the plan is the same, considering he hasn't worked out the first time round. So why would you go again for a change at the end of extra time, Kepa coming on and replacing Mendy and going through the whole thing again? I think this time it would be Mendy's chance, Mendy's opportunity to be in goal for the penalty shootout, and then see if he does better than Kepa. Personally, I would love another crazy shootout, like a 15-14 or something, but with Mendy in goal this time.
And what about you, Craig? What are your thoughts on this?
I agree with the boys there and what Ali was saying. Mendy was superb. But, you know, it was stats-driven, we know that, and it just didn't work. So I would imagine... if Mendy is still in the goal and had a good game after 120 minutes, if it goes to extra time, I don't think we'll see the same decision being made. I think he'll stick with his goalkeeper. But I get the feeling we're not going to go that far this time.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of talk about Chelsea, so we must turn our attentions to Liverpool. Jules, we asked you to bring out that Chelsea 11. We've asked you to do the same for Liverpool as well. And as Craig mentioned earlier, it's a big one that Fabinho is out. So what happens?
Yeah, it's huge. And I think then the midfield, there can always be a surprise, like a Curtis Jones, for example. But I think Henderson, Keita and Thiago, again, he picks it picks itself, really. Keita started in the League Cup final. There's no reason why he doesn't start. Henderson, I think, will be the most holding midfielder of the three, and then Thiago will have the role of detecting the pace of the game and bossing that midfield. The front three, of course, there are more options, but right now it feels like Diaz, Mane and Salah should be the front three that Klopp will go for. Salah was obviously, as we saw, rested in the last Premier League match. I believe for this final, and also because he'd played a lot before that and he hasn't been in great form lately. Only one goal in his last eight in the Premier League where he scored. So maybe he needed a bit of that rest and played the last 20 minutes. And then at the back, obviously between Matip and Konate, there might be a decision to make for Klopp. And we've seen some big Champions League matches, for example, where Konate was preferred to Matip. But again, we saw in the last game how important Matip can be, especially when he comes out with the ball. He's so good at running with the ball, even dribbling with the ball and creating a 2v1 situation, for example, in the opposition's last third. So Matip for that is so much better than Konate that there's a case for him. If you want more physicality, maybe you go for Konate, and certainly on set pieces he's been a threat and scored in the Champions League. So I can see a decision there to be made for Klopp, but for the rest it's pretty straightforward.
Craig, we did talk about Fabinho being out earlier. How much of a drop-off is Henderson here? How much of an impact is that going to be?
Well, it's not so much... I think drop-off's maybe a bit harsh. I mean, he's a different player, isn't he? I mean, he's been a brilliant, brilliant player for Liverpool. If you'd asked me at the time when he went to Liverpool, would he have this kind of career at that club and would his game improve, I would have said no. And to be fair to him, he has just got better and better and better. But he doesn't have that natural defensive skill set of reading the game that Fabinho has. He's a different kind of player. And you take that out and all of a sudden, particularly with two fullbacks, Kay, that go forward like Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, particularly on the right-hand side where we know Alexander-Arnold has some wobbles defensively, you need somebody that can go and cover that position. So, yeah, it's a huge blow for them. But Henderson can do that job. It's just that Fabinho's one of the best in the world at doing it, and that's going to be a huge miss, clearly.
All right, let's look at the predictions from these guys then, shall we? Because Liverpool are the favourites coming into this game to lift the FA Cup. Who are you going for, Ale?
Well, I can argue that the best chances in that last final that we've been talking about repeatedly went to Chelsea, certainly in the early part of the game. And those chances will fall, if indeed Romelu Lukaku is playing, to that very guy. It would be a wonderful story for Lukaku to put those away. It's not going to matter. This is going to be Liverpool, and Liverpool is going to continue their good season, becoming a great season, and their chase for a quadruple, which I think it's out of their hands at this point, but at the very least, they're going to give themselves an opportunity. Liverpool are going to win it.
Jan?
Well, I said that Chelsea are going to win the Champions League. Check. I said they're going to win the Premier League this season. It's out of reach. Big time out of reach. And I got a feeling that Chelsea will do this. And I think that, yes, Craig had a good analysis on Fabinho missing out. But as much as we talk about the attackers, the tres amigos by Liverpool, but also the alternative that Chelsea have going forward, I think this finally going to be decided in the engine room in midfield. And Al talked about it. It's a lot of work for Chelsea to try to stop Thiago, because Thiago is the more or less the quarterback out there. He's the guy who decides the tempo and all that kind of thing. It will be decided there. And I got a feeling that this time Chelsea will make it. So I will go for Chelsea again.
Oh, a little bit more balanced right now. Who have you got, Jules?
Yeah, I've got Chelsea as well. Maybe it goes to penalties again, but I've got a feeling that they will do it this time.
Craig?
I think there's no doubt Chelsea were very wasteful in the Carabao Cup final, as Ali mentioned, and that could have been a different story. But they're just not clinical up front. Yeah, they got three against Leeds, two against Wolves recently, but defensively they've been a bit shaky. I think Liverpool have just been, you know, looked as if they've been at sort of 75%, 80% recently. But that front three, if they hit form, are hard to stop. And I think just by a whisker, I'm going to go for Liverpool.
So it's all balanced here on ESPN FC today.
Well, go on then, you have the final say.
Oh, I have the final say. All right, I'm going for Liverpool.
Ah, look at you.
You can find out tomorrow, FA Cup final. Craig Burley, Stevie Nicol and Dan Thomas will have all the build-up for you as well. 11 a.m. Eastern, coverage begins and then the live game will follow. Make sure to catch that. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. As if the North London derby wasn't heated enough already, Tottenham's 3-0 win over Arsenal on Thursday has just added some extra fuel to the fire. Following on from Arsenal's loss to Spurs, Mikel Arteta had the referees.
Okay.
He was asking to just explain their decisions. He said, if I say what I think, I'm suspended for 6 months. Mm. I don't know how to lie, so I prefer not to say what I think. I cannot say what I think. I am not unhappy with my players. I am proud of my players. I want the referees to come in front of the camera and explain his decisions. It's a shame because such a beautiful game was destroyed today. Well, here's Conte's response to what Mikel Arteta had to say, this coming right after the game, where obviously he was pretty frustrated.
Uh-huh.
I listen to him to complain a lot. Yeah. I think that... he has to be focused more to his team and not to go to complain and to because he has just started this work, and I think that he has to be calm and to try to continue to work because he's very good. But to listen a coach to complain a lot of time is not good.
So, Jules, it's not just Conte who's criticised Arteta for his comments. He was criticised heavily by the panel on yesterday's show. Is there anything you can say to defend him?
I'm not sure I want to defend him. I agree with Conte. I agree with what the panel said yesterday. I think this was vintage Conte. He's so good at that. If we had continued the next stage of the conversation from Conte was like, I can whine and complain as well because we're playing tonight, so Thursday, and then we have to play on Sunday at 12:30 when they play Monday night. So I'm not happy with that. So it was pure Conte. It was a great moment from him. This is learning curve for Arteta. I think we've said it a lot this season. He makes mistakes on the pitch tactically. For his starting 11 in the team selection, during matches as well. He makes mistakes off the pitch too sometimes in his press conferences, in what he can say after games. We know how passionate he is, how emotional. This is also an overachieving season because finishing top four, I think with a squad like that, would be an incredible achievement. And I think he's so close, and yet he knows he can slip away, and he doesn't obviously want that to happen. So maybe that can explain the reaction he had after the game on Thursday night on UK television. But it's learning for him. I think all of that is part of his learning curve.
Jan, do you have some sympathy for Arteta? I mean, I was told that you thought some of those decisions were soft.
Soft and clumsy, yes, I can see that. But I've worked with both of them, Conte and Arteta, pitch side. And first of all, I think it was Klopp saying this week, or there are so many press conferences now, he said that we should wait and be tolerant for what is said straight after the game. What I think that Arteta sometimes do, he speaks with his heart. He speaks with his heart just after the game. He speaks as a player. If he has a look at his record, he has 13 red cards since he was the manager of Arsenal Football Club. And rightly so, Conte is also then and again complaining about things. But he's probably the most of the time complaining about himself. As we see the numbers here with the red cards. But I've always said that Conte, he's so disappointed in himself. I once interviewed him and he was so disappointed as I was thinking when he answered my first question that I should ask for the doctor to come in because I was afraid that he would kind of dig himself down in a hole. So he sounded as a headmaster there to Arteta, and as the boys have been saying, and Jules was saying, I think Arteta will learn from this. Having said that, I like a passion kind of guy that Arteta just speak out, do all the things. Yes, sometimes it was wrong. And as you're saying, Kay, I think what they did in the box on the first goal, the penalty, clumsy, have to be aware. And if you have one yellow card, just stay away for trouble for a while. That is a golden rule for everybody on a football pitch. So yeah, I don't think he had the best defense in the world.
There's a high degree of irony when Antonio Conte, of all people, is telling somebody else to be calm. Huh? Look, I understand exactly what Antonio Conte is doing, by the way. He is shifting all the emotional energy and all the nervous energy onto Mikel Arteta, saying, yeah, by me telling you to stay calm, I'm actually telling you you're about to freak out. And where you were in a comfortable position, now you're not comfortable, and we're still coming. That is exactly what Antonio Conte is telling him. So there's no chance that Antonio Conte is sending a message to Mikel Arteta and say, be calm. You're good. Hey, look, it's just the beginning of your career. You're going to be great at this, okay? Hey, I believe in you, but just be calm. No. He's telling be calm. Actually, be nervous because we're coming and you know we're coming.
And as we all know, there's nothing worse than being told, calm down.
Yeah, calm down when you're like,
you're on the defensive.
Calm down, what?
You know, calm down, me calm down, you calm down. All right, so, Jan, did you want to say something there? Because I'm going to ask you
no,
guys
No, I'm just laughing. I think Al is spot on. This is a kind of bullying kind of tactic from Conte, putting Arteta under pressure. And I think Conte is doing this brilliantly, and he has learned more of that trade than Arteta has. Of course, he's from the country of Machiavelli in Florence, so he knows this thing better than Arteta.
Okay, so let's take a look at the predictions, because it's even Stevens when it comes to who's going to finish in the top four between the two of them. And I'd just like to mention to you, Jules, that on the show yesterday, Craig, Stevie and Don all went for Spurs, even though Arsenal do hold the advantage going into these final two games. So can they do it? Can they finish in the top four?
Yeah, I think they can. I think they will finish in the top four. There's the goal difference as well that we cannot forget. We seem to forget to mention. A lot of people seem to forget about the goal difference, which is massively in favour of Spurs. And obviously, in case of they both have the same amount of points, Spurs will then get the fourth place on goal difference. But I think Arsenal are very capable of winning away at Newcastle and then at home against Everton. I think right now there's a big sense of injustice in that dressing room. Whether you agree or not, whether you thought the referee made a mistake or was right or wrong, it doesn't matter. Those Arsenal players feel the injustice right now. And I think the idea very much in their camp right now is to use that feeling to spur them on away at Newcastle and say, you know what, people are writing us off now, which is true. It's the same in England today, Kay, exactly like what the boys said last night. Everybody is saying, oh, Newcastle are going to, Tottenham are going to do it now, and Arsenal are going to drop point away at Newcastle on Monday night. And I think they want to prove people wrong. They want to use that, the feeling, the frustration that they have right now after the game, and they felt they were harshly done by the referee. And again, maybe we don't have to agree with them, but that's how they feel right now, to spur them on, go to Newcastle and show everybody that they can have nerves of steel, that they can regroup well, they can fight again, go and get what would be huge 3 points, really. And then, obviously, it would be even more into their hands before the last home game of the season.
What do you think, Jan? Is that a rallying cry for this final run? And who have you got finishing fourth?
I will also go Arsenal, and I will do this as a challenge for all Tottenham supporters, because I'm a bit older than I'm the oldest in the panel today, and I've seen Tottenham over years always doing the Tottenham things. So this is, I know so many Tottenham, in my age, they love Tottenham with Glenn Hoddle, Ricardo Villa, Osvaldo Ardiles, and they always, when they're 3-0 up 5 minutes to go, they just feel that they will end up be 3-3. So I think this is a challenge for Tottenham now. They have two games now to change that kind of thing. Having said that, I'm not that 100% sure about Arsenal either. But there's something about Spurs that they always will end up doing some Spursy things. But I think that the form, Harry Kane, I just love how Harry Kane is playing at the moment, scoring goals, setting. He's a playmaker now. He's doing so many great stuff.
You can't tell who you're going for. You're saying Arsenal, but then you go, but you know, I just love Spurs. No, you've got Harry Kane doing this.
I kind of try to challenge a lot of my friends who are Tottenham supporters. I'm talking really to them now. I'm saying that I think that Arsenal will be top four, but because Spurs will do Spursy things.
Right.
So let's see what's happening.
Ale?
About a month ago, we were asked this question, and I said back then, and I'm going to say it now. Spurs. I'm going with Spurs. Now, similarly to Jan, I have an interesting relationship with Spurs fans. Over the years, there's been some negativity. not coming from me, seemingly coming from other places. But still, I think Spurs are the team that are going to finish in the top four.
So you don't hate them?
Well, of course I don't. I don't have hate in my heart. All I have is love.
You can't hate. It's not possible to hate. It's not possible to hate Tottenham because they are the diva of English football. You never know what you get. I think it's not possible to hate them.
I think they hate me. But what I will say is Spurs are going to finish top four. Take it for what you will. Maybe you think this is a jinx. Maybe you think this is a problem for you. Maybe this is a curse. But I think top four for Spurs is realistic.
Well, we'll see what everybody has to say on Monday night, because this one is going to be drawn out the Premier League schedule this weekend. You've got Spurs in action on Sunday against Burnley. And then we have to wait until Monday to see what happens at St. James's Park between Newcastle and Arsenal. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Robert Lewandowski will not be allowed to leave Bayern this summer. That is according to Herbert Heiner, the Bayern Munich president, who said Robert Lewandowski has a contract with Bayern until June 2023 and he will fulfil it.
Hey.
Jan Agafyatov, what happens here? How do you think this is all going to unfold?
Well, this started months ago and we've talked so much about this. And I've said all along they were desperate to get Erling Haaland in there. The problem is, of course, for every meeting you do with Haaland, Team Haaland or the player, Robert Lewandowski will not be amused. So this was something they risked. They now have the best striker in the world. Sorry, no disrespect, Benzema. They have the best striker in the world. He is not happy and he wants to leave. So the deal is with Bayern Munich. If you put Herbert Heiner, the president, on the stage, if you put the CEO, Oliver Kahn, on a stage, if you put the sport director, Salihamidzic, on a stage, they will have three different opinions. And if you do the same talk show the next day, they will probably change these positions. Nobody knows. So it's all up in the air. Now the latest thing is that he will leave at least in 2023 because he will fulfill his contract, but he won't extend it. And Robert Lewandowski, and I've said this for a long, long time, this man is not happy. And how can you be happy when you score 41 goals, you break the record of Gerd Müller, and the only thing people talking about is this 21-year-old from Norway going to replace me being Robert Lewandowski, and now he's in Manchester City. So this is to be continued.
Where will he go, Jan? He's been linked with Barcelona. How realistic is that?
Big time, he's been linked there. Back in the days, he was linked to Real Madrid. Real Madrid wanted him. Remember, he scored 4 goals when he played for Dortmund. Fantastic. I think that Barcelona comes up because he wants to have a new challenge, go somewhere. A great football club, Barcelona. It's maybe the right time now to be a part of the project of Xavi. But I think that Chelsea could be an outsider. I think that if people feel that he will be available for 30, 40 million euro, although he is 34, he's fit as a 27-year-old. He's looking after himself. There are still 2, 3, 4 seasons in him. And we've seen Cristiano Ronaldo is scoring goals for fun at Manchester United, although the Manchester United fans want to say that he is the problem. But still, Robert Lewandowski could end up in a club near you. But let's just see this. We're speaking today on a Friday. Saturday, probably Bayern Munich will have another opinion. So let's just wait and see.
If there is a chance, Saleh, for Barcelona, how hard should they push to get Lewandowski?
You know, we're getting close to summer, okay? Getting a little warmer. It's pool season, right? When you're about to get in the pool, you don't, and you haven't really tested the water just yet, you don't just go jump. You kind of dip your toe in the water, right? Just a little, let me see. That's exactly what I would do if I'm Barcelona. I dip my toe in the water and I see, is this realistic? Can we afford it? And does it make sense financially? You got to make the decision based on information, based on what your team needs are. Is this an upgrade on Aubameyang? Yes, it is. Is this the greatest area of need that you have? No, it isn't. There are a variety of positions on the field where Barcelona needs to strengthen. So, if financially it makes sense and you're not mortgaging the stability that you're trying to get with this team financially, then sure, go ahead and see what you can work out. But if this means that you sacrifice the opportunity to strengthen your team in more areas on the field, and you're also mortgaging the future of the club, then stay away, stay away, stay away. Warning, step away from the vehicle, get out of the way. This is not for you. And it's hard to say no to Robert Lewandowski. It's hard because Jan just said it. This guy has been special for Bayern Munich. But if you're Barcelona, you have to see the bigger picture, not just the pool that you have in front of you.
Well, you can see a bigger picture, at least this weekend, on how this will all shape up on the final day of the Bundesliga. He will be in action for Bayern. We'll see if there are any clues in their game. But make sure to catch this one. We'll see who gets the relegation playoff spot and also how the European spots shape up. We've also got La Liga available on Plus for you every single game, just like the Bundesliga. And you can catch all of those this weekend on Plus.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Highlight of the day, though, in Newcastle, back in England, our very own Shaka Hislop being awarded the Freedom of the City. This is due to his work as the founder and honorary president of Show Racism, the Red Card. That's what's earned him the accolade. Over 25 years now, this has been going. He will also be Newcastle's guest of honor for the clash with Arsenal on Monday evening. And we have to salute our lovely friend Shaka for all his work here, Ale.
Now, we make a lot of fun of Xhaka, but this is good work from Xhaka. This is not the power rankings that he puts out every week. This is great work from him. We're proud of him, and what a campaign. And look, it's an important issue. And Xhaka is a spokesperson. He's out in front of the camera every day and making all of us proud. This is a great moment for him. And it's proud that one of us is actually doing something nice, something good, something productive. I love me some Xhaka Hislop.
Yeah, we are very proud of you, Xhaka. We do miss you here, though. So make sure you get back soon. Enjoy that game, though, on Monday, and then you can tell us all about it. Thanks so much for being with us on the latest edition of the show. Make sure to stick around, though, because the tweets have been coming in. Mm. We'll be answering them. Well, these guys will on Extra Time coming up next. Welcome into this Friday the 13th edition of Extra Time. I think it's the only Friday the 13th this calendar year, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
My uncle told me that today.
Okay, so you're...
I've got nothing to base it on.
Right. You've done no research on this information.
Trusting you, which is probably not a good idea. We've got Ali Moreno, Jules Arend, and also Yanaga Fyotov. And Ali actually reminded me it was Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And did ask me if I was a scary movie type.
Uh-huh.
Guys, do you like scary movies, Jules?
Not at all. Absolutely not. This, like, I can't even start watching. It's not my thing. And I'm not superstitious so much. The only thing I do is I don't walk under the scaffolding or the ladder. That's all I do. So even in the streets of London, and there's a lot of work at the moment, I try to avoid walking under the scaffolding.
I'm not superstitious, but I won't walk under the scaffolding.
It sounds like superstition.
That's the only thing.
All right, Jan, you're not a scary movie type either?
Absolutely not. Give me a Hollywood film with a nice ending. Everybody think it's unreal that everything went good that he got. Give me that. I want that. And you know, Kay, Jennifer Aniston got to be in it, so that will not be a scary movie.
Of course. Ali loves them.
Yeah, I do. Now, the slasher ones is just a whole lot of gore and blood. Those ones, not as much. The ones that really get me going are sort of the demonic possession ones. Those are the creepy ones. I like those. The Exorcism of Emily Rose, that's something special. There's one point in that movie in which the person who has been possessed, Emily Rose, of course, she starts going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now, that's creepy right there. When she does
it.
It's creepy in a good way. I like it. I enjoy it. I find it entertaining.
Like my uncle's old facts, I'm going to take Ali's word for it. I'm not watching
that.
Yeah,
he could be in a scary movie. But when you did that, Ali, I was scared here because I'm alone in a hotel room in Düsseldorf.
Yeah, don't have nightmares, Jan. All right, Jules, first question for you.
I will now.
First question for you, Jules. How many players do Chelsea need to be able to compete with Liverpool and Man City next season? If they added Lewandowski, would they be automatic contenders? What centre-backs could they bring in to replace Rudiger and Christensen?
Yeah, it's a very good, I think it's a very important summer coming up, really. I thought, and I tipped them on the show to win the league when Lukaku arrived. I really thought it was the final piece in the jigsaw. I was wrong. I think there was a few of us who thought like me and who were all wrong. But now, because of the departure of Christensen, very likely Azpilicueta as well, and Rudiger, already defensively, this is a big rebuilding work. Go and get young players. Go and get a Jules Koundé. Go and get those kind of defenders there. Go and get Ndika, Frankfurt. You know, be clever. Maybe think outside of the box at times instead of going, I don't know, to get Koulibaly and Napoli, for example, who's an amazing defender, but he's already 30 and on the wrong side of the career, really. I think there's plenty of really young, talented centre-backs, for example, to come in and fit in there. You've got Chalobah, maybe, who can give a bit more time. And Thiago Silva is there for another season, and after that, I think he'll be too old. So already think about that. And I think, yeah, offensively, they need maybe, I believe, a very, very good one-on-one player, someone who can take on defenders like Ousmane Dembélé, that kind of player, I think would be very useful for them. And then there's obviously the £100 million question over the striker, because it's one thing if you want to sell Lukaku and you might find a club ready to buy him, you're going to lose some money, but okay, you sell him, but then who do you get? You still need a striker if Lukaku goes. So is Lewandowski the answer? He's an incredible striker. Would he go to Chelsea? Maybe. We know that Pini Zahavi, certainly before what's happening at the club now, used to have every single door and window and open at Chelsea Football Club, so it might be easier for Lewandowski to move there. But yeah, if you buy Lewandowski, I think you get close to City and Liverpool.
All right, Jan, how much of an advantage is it for players like Haaland to come from a footballing family while they're developing? And can it sometimes be a hindrance?
Yes, I think it could be a hindrance. That is one thing. But I think that in a football business like ours, it is good to have people around you who can give you good advice. I mean, that is a general answer to it. But you can also have a great coach. I think a lot of us, when we've done it in football, we will always point to one or two coaches that helped us a lot, gave us good advices in terms of Erling Haaland. We know that Alfie is his agent. There's something we've been talking about. Raiola has been his agent for many years, but that is wrong. Raiola has helped him with the dealing, doing the contracts, setting up clubs for him. But they have been working very hard on this. They have a great model how they choose their clubs, and so far with Salzburg and Dortmund, they have hit the target, and I'll probably do with Manchester City again. So yes, sometimes it could be a problem with that name, and you go from being the son of Alfie Haaland, and now Alfie Haaland is the father of Erling Haaland. So things change in a football career.
Maybe not with Stevie so much. I think sometimes he's still saying Alfie when it's Erling. Well. That's happened a few times, I think. For Ale, what will Real Madrid's back four look like in general next season? Will Alaba move to left back, assuming Mendy will be injured half the season? Or will Rudiger, Militao and Alaba be rotated in the centre-back role?
If Mendy is injured, then Alaba moves out to the left-hand side, and then you have Rudiger playing against and alongside Militao. Now, I would also say that the Militao-Alaba pairing has worked out much better than anybody could have imagined. Militao, as good as he has been this season, coming into this year, and he still has this in his game, has those moments in which you say, how is this guy playing at Real Madrid? There are moments in which he makes this sort of mistakes that you kind of go, man, that was dumb. But for the most part, on the balance of the season, alongside Alaba has sort of been the brains of the operation, and Militao has been the physicality of the operation. And you put them together, they have been very good. How you go about separating these two, that's a decision that Carlo Ancelotti is going to have to make. But if you're going to make a decision at all, it would be the logical one would be Alaba down to the left back position, and then you have Militao playing alongside Rudiger. What I'm concerned about there is that you have athleticism, you have fight, but do you have the leadership that you have seen from Alaba playing alongside Militao? I'm not quite sure that that's the correct answer.
Question for Jules. Which young left-back in the market should Barca target as a potential future replacement for Jordi Alba?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that's one that they're looking at right now. I mean, they've got Alejandro Balde, who plays for the reserve team, who I think has potential, but he's definitely not ready, and certainly could take him a long time if he ever gets there to be even close to the level that Jordi Alba has. So do you go and get Gaia Valencia, for example? Are you looking outside of Spain, or certainly outside of those kind of Gaia type of player, and go for someone from the rest of the big leagues, for example? It's a really interesting one. I mean, I would think that Gaia would be perfect because obviously he was at La Masia before as a youngster, because his ability and the qualities that he has are so similar. I think potentially he could be the perfect replacement.
I can throw one in, if I may, okay? I throw in a left back. I'm not sure that you, Jules, will think that he is far away, but is he far enough to go to Barcelona? Is David Raum playing for Hoffenheim on the left side? And the thing with him, he's not so good defensively, but I've been so impressed with him this season. He just goes up and down all the time. And maybe the way Barcelona playing, that could be a player that could fit in for them.
And to the point of Jan there, it's a name that is sort of flying under the radar. You see?
Yeah.
So if you're Barcelona right now and you have your financial difficulties, you go and approach this guy and you say, well, he can be a solution for us in the future.
right? And this is the profile player that we can go after, because financially we're not in a position where we can go chase bigger names, that we can go, no. We take an educated guess and an educated gamble, but in that educated gamble, it's going to have to make sense financially. And this is a prototype or in the profile player that perhaps you got to do your homework, you got to feel good about it, and then you go and chase this guy and say, maybe he's the answer for us.
Jan, did you just start a rumor?
No, I didn't start a rumor, because I think that everybody has seen him, have seen David Raum being very good. I saw him against Bayern Munich. He was excellent, and asked the wingers of Bayern Munich how it was to chase them back. I mean, they were gone after 1 hour to chase him. So David Raum to Barcelona, we can put that rumor out. Exclusive, extra time.
Team Raum.
here's the thing, Kay. The Haaland situation is already done.
Oh, so right?
we need a new one. We need something.
Keeping himself busy, which leads nicely to the next question. Ali and Jan, and I'll start with you, Ali.
Okay.
What was the highlight of your jobs now working as a pundit and commentator? We all know Kay's two highlights. Hint, it rhymes with Salon d'Or. What was your highlight?
Calling games in the 2014 World Cup from Brazil, in Brazil, and one of those games was actually Brazil against Mexico. I believe it was in Fortaleza. When that stadium started singing the national anthem from Brazil, and the whole structure of the stadium was shaking, I thought, I have no idea what I'm doing here and how I got to this position, but this is great. Loved every minute of it, and the energy when you're covering a World Cup is something special.
What about you, Jan?
Well, I think I had some time now to think it over, but I think that will be after Liverpool winning the Champions League final. Suddenly, Jurgen Klopp started singing, "Let's talk about six, baby," after winning the sixth trophy. That was great. It was also great when I did this season, I did Roma against Bodø/Glimt, Norwegian team, and José Mourinho had a go at me because he wanted me to explain what happened on the pitch. And thank God I was prepared for it. So we had a great conversation. And I think that was good TV, because I love the managers to be intense. I love them to have a go at us interviewers, because that makes us being sharp as well. So I think I will use them too.
Mourinho did that to me once at Real Madrid.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
he put it right back to me. And you have to be ready, don't you? Jan, I was ready,
exactly.
Don't worry. Jules, yeah, we're interested to know about your experience as well. What really stands out for you in your job?
It's been a long journey. I think I've had some incredible moments, like interviewing Diego Maradona when he was the head coach of Argentina. Ooh. When they came to Marseille to play France in a friendly. That was very, very special. And a bit like what Ali said, but when you cover World Cup and you go all the way with your team, you know, six, I was unfortunate because the final ended the way it did, but certainly in 18, it was an incredible time to follow this French national team, who went all the way with Kylian Mbappe and Paul Pogba and the team spirit that they had and Deschamps. And you almost feel a bit part of it, really, because you've covered them every single day. You wrote about them, you saw the players, you spent time with them. And you were there all, every day, all along in Russia, and especially when it's your country as well that you're reporting on. It's a very, very special feeling.
I am shocked, and I mean shocked, that Jules did not bring that every other day when he sits down across from Gab Marcotti and does the Gab and Jules podcast. I'm telling you, I thought that would be it.
Well, there's that, then there's Neymar's party.
Yes, Neymar, so, yeah. Yes. Yeah, I thought the Gab and Jules podcast would be up.
Where does the Gab and Jules podcast come, Jules?
How can I say it? Is Gab watching extra time? I'm not so sure. No, it's fine. It has to be.
But I will, if I may say, Kay, also, you know that position we have, something always so funny things happen, and it happens out of nothing. And I remember I was doing Monaco, I was in a pitch side reporter there, and Mbappé came. He was like, must have been 9 years of age at that time. And so, he was playing though. But then someone reminded me of that Cristiano Ronaldo Mbappé photo. And I did the same thing with him with my mobile phone, with me being Cristiano Ronaldo, Mbappé being Mbappé, of course. And then we met up again in Paris and we said hello and blah, 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 blah. And he didn't speak a lot of English, but I kind of made him come in to me and I said, ladies and gentlemen, Mbappé now will do his first interview ever in England. And he was English and he was standing next to me and he was so desperate to get a translator over. At that time, he didn't speak a lot of English. And that was also those funny things when you see what fantastic career this young lad has done in his career.
I think maybe Jan's saying that he is behind the reason that Mbappe speaks such good English now.
I think so too, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, Jules, right?
Yeah, I'll take that one.
Also, I don't know if you figure out in that answer how Jan essentially compared himself to Cristiano Ronaldo. That's what he did.
Yeah.
He took the place of Ronaldo somehow.
He's the hair.
Yeah.
He's the hair.
All right. Hi, I love you all, and happiest of Friday.
Hey, there you go.
That's
nice.
All right.
Okay, here comes the rest.
What? Okay. Jules, if you had the ability to supply a club financially significantly on par with Newcastle and Man City, which club would you back in any world league with such a vast fortune?
Oh, good question.
I will give it to PSG, even more money. That doesn't harm anyone. They can go and buy even more players. I don't care what they do with it, but at least maybe then we can win the Champions League. Maybe.
He said it himself, so nobody else has to make fun there. So Jules is giving it to PSG. What about you, Ale?
Oh, come on. Got to go with the team that I supported as a kid in our league back home in Venezuela. El Unión Atlético Táchira, el Deportivo Táchira Carrusel Aurinegro. The team that my dad supported and the team that then he took us to the stadium to watch them play. Man, I would put every single dollar on that team and just and to be honest, I would do it more for my father to see him watch his team be successful.
Aww, that's very nice.
That's what I told you, that I'm full of love in my heart.
I know, it seems so. Well, you'd have to teach us all how to say that name.
Well,
can we shorten it?
El Deportivo Táchira.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, see, it has changed names because financial difficulties have forced that different owners take over, and so then they change the name here and there and everywhere, but original Deportivo Táchira.
So, Jules Greed, you sentimentality.
Yes.
What about you, Jan?
Well, I would go for love. I think that after Jules gave it to PSG, I mean, that's unbelievable. How many times are you going to buy Mbappé? Three times? Have the best players in your
exactly.
Squad? But I think that this times I would give it to Eintracht Frankfurt. I mean, what they have made out of this season with their passionate fans. Imagine if we got a couple of more great players there. Now they can come into the Champions League if they win the Europa League. Then they will be in top one in the draw as well. It's unbelievable. It's so exciting days. And I can't wait to go to Sevilla and do that final. It's going to be fantastic. So I will give it to the Finance Metropole Frankfurt.
Hey, there you go.
And he knows that I'll give it to Middlesbrough, so it's win-win.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
All right, that was, I love that question.
You
thanks so much
well.
For your tweets. Look at Jules getting the little snake back now. We'll see you in the Champions League final, Jules. PSG Middlesbrough, one day in my dreams.
Okay. That's not
all
happening.
Right, it isn't. End of the show. Let's end it on a high, will we? Let me dream. Okay, don't forget.
That's a scary movie right there.
We'll do it all over again. Ha ha ha.